Michigan wrestling fans, it is Monday, April 28th, and we have just finished watching tonight's Go Home to Extreme Rules edition of Monday Night Raw, and it is time for our tradition, as we do every single Monday night. We follow it up here on Mega Powers Radio with the MPR Raw post-show, the most interactive post-Raw experience out there. I'm your host, Mike Payton, station director here at Mega Powers Radio. With me this evening, first off, the leader of SmarkOutMoment.com and the host of Smack Talk on that, Mr. Tony Mango. What's shaking, Tony?
Not too much. What's up with you, buddy?
Oh, man. You know, I'm torn on tonight's Raw. I got to say. So, we'll get more into that.
Torn.
Mr. Steven Huego from Unanimous Decision MMA and Addicted to Anime is also on the line with us. Mr. Steven Huego, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. It's like, I actually enjoyed Raw, but at the same time, I don't think it did a good job of promoting the upcoming pay-per-view.
Yeah, and you know, the strangest thing is, like, I really want to be excited for this, especially because it's really close to my hometown. I almost wanted to go to the show, but it was kind of expensive. And like, it's definitely not worth paying $70 for the nosebleed seats. So they definitely didn't get me sold on that. Looks like we have someone else coming on the line. While I'm getting him on here, though, why don't I start off asking you guys what the number one thing you took away from the show? Steven, why don't you start us off?
There isn't anything that I really took away other than Bad News Barrett is still fucking awesome. I'm just a big fan and on a high as far as Bad News Barrett goes. And the only other thing I took away is I'm enjoying the Shield vs. Evolution feud, but I wish the awkward beatdowns would be cut to a minimum.
Yeah, it seems like this is becoming a repetitive thing. Mr. Tony Mango, what's the first thing or the main thing you took away from tonight's show?
I don't think I really had anything, really. There's like good parts and bad parts, and nothing stood out to me as the big thing to take away. There's, you know, high points and low points, and we'll talk about that. The biggest thing of the night, obviously, we're going to get into one thing in particular. I'm not going to, you know, throw it out there right now, but I don't think that there was like an overall theme or anything to really take away from it.
Indeed. We just got another person on the line here from the Retro Unlimited Network, Mr. Miguel Leon. What's shaking, Miguel?
I fell asleep during the main event.
Really?
Yeah, like literally. That's why I'm late. I got up until when the match got DQ'd, and all of a sudden I'm awoken to the sound of "Hey!" So I'm like, "Oh, Chrisley's on. This show's starting. I gotta get onto my computer."
Indeed. Well, what is the number one thing you took away from Raw tonight?
Just long. There's not enough content on these 3-hour Raws to warrant 3 hours. Like I said, the fact that I fell asleep during the main event should be the big takeaway. The fact that I try to stay awake because I know I'm going to need to talk about Monday Night Raw with you guys, but the fact that I just couldn't take it anymore and I just succumbed to the boredom of tonight, just that's the biggest takeaway for me.
Well, we invite all of you out there to tell us what you took away from tonight's show. We have the chat room already rolling on the broadcast page on megapowersradio.com. We'll also be opening up the phone lines around 11:30, where you can already get yourself in line if you dial in with your cellular phone or your landline, even if you still have one of those. Area code 760-512-7247. You can also dial in using Skype if you click on the little Skype icon on top of the broadcast page. So, let's go ahead and start digging into things from the very beginning of the show. We opened up with a video package recapping what's going on right now with John Cena and Bray Wyatt. We see a steel cage already covering the ring with that awesome steel cage. Whoa, 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 whoa. Is that the basis for dubstep? They took the steel cage tune?
Maybe. I'd be pretty interested in seeing that happen.
Well, John Cena ends up coming down and standing in it, cutting one of his typical John Cena promos. But then things get very untypical quickly when the lights go out. And all of a sudden we hear he's got the whole world in his hands, but it's not being sung in your typical voice you're expecting to hear from Bray Wyatt or Luke Harper. It's this really high-pitched, odd voice you're not used to hearing in wrestling. And it's like, what the hell is that? The lights come on, and it's an entire children's choir singing it. Totally creepy, totally awesome. Bray Wyatt ends up coming down. They all walk down, surround the ring. Bray Wyatt's giving him orders of different verses to sing. Like, he's got the whole C Nation in his hands. And all these other ones. I love this segment. The lights go out again. When they come back on, all the children are wearing sheep's masks. It's totally creepy. Bray Wyatt's sitting in his rocker. He's laughing maniacally. He's got one of the children sitting on his laps. His laps, because he's got more than one.
He's got the whole laps.
This is one of the best openings to a Raw I've seen in a long time, man. This started things on a super, super high note. That's why I said it's hard for me really to hate on a show that began so awesomely. Let's go around and get your guys' thoughts on that opening segment. Tony?
That was definitely the best opening that I've seen in a long time, and the best segment that I've seen in quite a while as well, just in general on Raw. That was really cool. A couple little things to take away from it. I thought at first when the kid was singing, I was like, oh, crap, don't tell me this is what Eric Rowan's voice sounds like. Because I'm not used to him at all. Like, he's just going to pop out and just be like in that high-pitched voice. Oh, my God, that would have been hilarious and creepier, too, as well. John Cena not attributing a quote to Batman, Dark Knight. Someone said you either die or, you know, that, et cetera, et cetera. More people believe in Harvey Dent than they do John Cena, don't they? Nice little pun. Tap, tap, tap. Pat myself in the back on that one. I really like this a lot. This really sold me on this. And even John Cena's part, despite that Batman quote that he just kind of threw away, I thought that even that part was good too. Him just flat out being upset about it. They ruined it later on when later on he was just kind of like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to go back to my normal self again. But at the very least, that opening segment was pretty damn awesome. Boss, I would even say. I would go so far as to throw that out there, which I normally don't do.
Miguel, what'd you think about this opening segment with the creepy children?
Overall, I liked it. I think what really took me in was the kind of awkwardness that John Cena had early on, and not just the normal John Cena awkwardness where he acknowledged the fact that the entire WWE universe voted against him pretty much. And I was intrigued. I wanted to know where he was going to go with this. You know, was this going to be a change of pace for Cena? But as he does, he falls back into line, and I kind of scoffed at it. But once they started to really kick up with the choir and the Wyatts and all that, and that final sequence, that final shot of the children with the masks and that sweeping camera shot really tied it all together. And I just thought overall it was a well-done segment.
Totally. Wago, what did you think about our opening segment?
Well, personally, I didn't find it a typical John Cena promo. I thought him asking the fans why was something a bit different for him, and I enjoyed it. I like the story that they're playing, but Bray Wyatt's taking everything from him, and the, him taking the kids away was almost like John Cena's main demographic being taken from him, too. So it was really neat.
I never even put that together. That's a very deep takeaway from that.
So I thought the opening segment was awesome, all the way from John Cena's promo to asking, why did you let me get beaten down and not have a fair fight, all the way to Bray Wyatt coming out and doing his whole creepy little skit. And I think what sold it for me is when the lights came back on with all the kids with the sheep masks on, the fact that he had one sitting in his lap as he rocked backwards and forwards maniacally as it went to commercial. I thought that was sweet and just finished off the whole segment very nice. Well done. One of the better openings.
Is St. Louis typically a smarky town?
I wouldn't say so. I honestly thought this segment would have had better, like, been done better justice via the fans in a better crowd.
I'm going to pull something out of the chat room here. Brian the Brain saying, a friend said it would have been better if they would have opened with the kids having the masks on singing from the very beginning. I don't know if I agree with that. I think it added an extra element when they could do that later on. If they had just started, then it would have been giving all of it away at the start.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It was almost like the cult following. It's like that he's like nails it home that he's converted all these kids to join the Wyatt family movement.
Plus, they might come off as just a bunch of midgets or something. Like, I don't know if there's a lot of people coming here. They're going to all be like lumberjacks in an El Torito and Hornswoggle match eventually down the line.
Man, think what a cool experience this was for those kids. Like, imagine just like being in your school's singing group, whatever, and they're like, all right, kids, we're going on a class field trip to a WWE event. We're actually going to get to perform. Oh, really? What are we doing? Well, you're going to be singing he's got the whole world in his hands, and you're going to put sheep masks on. Oh, really? Yeah, you're going to be doing it with John Cena and Bray Wyatt. John Cena and who?
You know what's funny? One of the kids that I was looking at when they kept panning over looked like he was petrified. And it's like, of course, you're performing on a big stage. You got thousands of people around. You're going to be like a little bit nervous and stuff. But I was enjoying this segment enough that it ran through my mind. Crap, is this going to be the first time that there's going to be a kid on WWE where I can't put them down as the worst part of the year?
Oh, and there was also a kid that like totally didn't give a fuck about singing. And I was just like casually just miming the words. You could totally tell that he didn't give a fuck.
That kid's lip syncing.
Yeah, I saw that kid. I think he was a ginger too. Even worse. All right, folks. Well, with that, we are going to open up the phone lines. And the first person we got in the line, as usual, is our friend from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Mr. JD. What's shaking, JD? We got you?
Yes, I'm here, guys. Happy Monday to you all. How are you guys doing tonight?
Well, absolutely tremendous, man. Always happy to be here on Mega Powers Radio. How are you, though?
I'm doing great, and it's always good to be with you guys. It's always the first call every Monday night to talk to you guys after Raw and give you my 2 cents worth. Yeah, tonight's show was a very interesting show in St. Louis, to say the least. I mean, to quote it best, how I'd say the first segment was definitely tits, no question about it. I mean, just the fans, I mean, it was so creepy and so just eerie. The first 15 minutes, I didn't think they were going to start it out that way. I thought they would have maybe put it on sometime at the end of the night or maybe early on in one of the hours. But to start it out the way they did, very good beginning. I think they definitely told a pretty good story here. I mean, there was a couple things that came off tonight, but all in all, how I'd say it was a thumbs in the middle type show tonight. I mean, there were some good parts and there were some bad parts tonight, obviously. But like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens Sunday, obviously, when Extreme Rules comes around. But
well, as always, the million dollar question, are you sold on Extreme Rules?
Well, I always watch pay-per-views with my friends, usually at the bar up the street. I think they did a little bit of selling tonight. How I think they did a little bit better this week than they did last week, I think, but especially with the Bray Wyatt Cena match. And I definitely think the Evolution Shield match is definitely going to be the high seller. I mean, there's a couple of matches that I'm not really too keen on. I mean, especially the WLC match, the WLC match, whatever the hell you want to call it, with El Torito and freaking Hornswoggle. I mean, do we really need to have that on the show? And plus, you have to have Alexander Rusev, the Drago wannabe, with his La Mila girlfriend, taking on Xavier Woods and R-Truth. Come on. This should have been your pre-show match. There's two matches right there. They're probably going to – they should have just yanked, however, off the card. And it looks like they might be having one more match added to the show from what we saw tonight with RVD, Cesaro, and Swagger, it looks like, unless they're sending up the next week. But I would not be surprised if they add that as an extra matchup maybe on Sunday night. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, do you think it's going to be a good show? I mean, Extreme Rules is building a reputation of being one of the higher quality pay-per-views. It's basically taking the place of Backlash. It's our follow-up of WrestleMania. It's going to be in the New York City, greater New York City area. You could definitely expect a hot crowd in the building that night. So,
They should have a hot crowd, no question about it. And you look at the next few pay-per-views after that. I mean, they've got Payback coming up in June in Chicago. Chicago's always a big market to them. They're going to be in Boston with Money in the Bank in late June. Of course, they got Battleground in July in Tampa. That's going to be interesting. I have a feeling, I'm going to say it right now, and you can quote me on this, I think CM Punk will be back at Payback. I have a funny feeling he will return in June at Payback in Chicago. If not, I think he'll be there in late June, early July at Money in the Bank. I think you're going to see him come back out and just literally tear everyone a new one. And I think when he comes back, there will be certain people in hell to pay.
Yeah, I agree. CM Punk will definitely be back.
Yep. Do you think how do you think they're going to approach him coming back, though? You think he's just going to show up like nothing happened, or are they going to play something into it?
I think he's just
going to
come out and just kind of big pipe bomb promo. I mean, maybe the biggest pipe bomb promo there ever will be. And I think when that happens, however, they will not be able to control him. I mean, he'll do the sit-in, I'm sure, but at the same time, he could cut a 15-20-minute promo, however, right out of the gate, however, and delay the first match a good half hour. I mean, if they can go into a city like, say, Chicago or Boston or whatever cities they're in June, he just sits in the ring, however, and just cuts a big scathing promo and just holds Raw hostage, you know, sort of like
he would have to talk about how prophetic his original pipe bomb speech was, where he talked about Stephanie and the idiot son-in-law taking over and all that.
Well, he'll definitely have plenty to say about that, but I'm sure he'll also shed some new light too about people who have really effed him over, like Bautista. You know, you talk about Batista, how, I mean, here's a guy who has absolutely done dick since he came back. Obviously, he's just there to kiss Triple H's ass, obviously like Randy Orton is too. And obviously, however, he says now, oh, I need some time off after Extreme Rules, that's why I got to promote my move. Well, here's an idea, Batista. Why'd you even come back in the first place? Oh, let's think about it. Three words, EGO. Enough said. And now you're coming out with a new DVD, Howard. What do we have to hear from you this time that we haven't heard from the last time? Oh, you were gone for 4 years because people, why? Didn't give me a call. Maybe it was because I decided to take some time off and do my MMA and acting career. Come on. You just came back because you wanted to get your ego back in the spotlight. And you haven't done shit since you got back, if you ask me, except being Triple H's butt boy.
Oh my goodness. All right, JD, we got another caller on the line and we appreciate them being patient. We want to get one last thing from you, of course, your high point, low point for tonight's Raw.
Well, I'd say high point definitely was the beginning of the show, no question about it. I think it was very, very good. I mean, they definitely, I think, are going to have a good match, at least Cena and Bray Wyatt will on Sunday. I think Bray Wyatt will win on Sunday. And I think the low point has to be this Daniel Bryan Kane Brie Bella thing. I mean, we hear Stephanie say every week, oh, I didn't mean it, Daniel. I didn't mean it, Brie. Bullshit. Stay off of television, Stephanie. We don't need to keep seeing you week after week sucking up to Kane and telling everyone, oh, I'm sorry. I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, guess what? Here's an idea. Go away, Stephanie. You have that Vicky Guerrero heat now. Go away. We don't want you on TV no more.
All right, JD. Great call as always, bro. We'll see y'all next week.
See you next Monday, guys.
All right, another excellent call from JD. We got another person on the line. Before we bring him on, though, just want to remind everyone out there, if you want to call and give your opinions about tonight's Raw or whatever else is going on in the world of wrestling, area code 760-512-7247 is a number to dial with your telephone line. Or if you'd like to use Skype, you can hit the Skype icon at the top of the page. And we got lots of people running in the chat room as well. Steven Huego holding things down as our liaison. Going to bring on our next caller from the 302 area code. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm Mike from Delaware.
Mike from Delaware. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. Am I coming in all right? Any lag or anything?
No, you sound great, man. What'd you think about Raw tonight?
I didn't watch all of it, but I think I caught some of the better parts. I liked the tag match. Not sure how you guys felt about that, but I thought it was cool. I couldn't really tell if it was real or not. I mean, if it was fake, then he did a terrible job at selling that leg injury, but everything was pretty good that I saw. I liked that match. No, that's a lie. Terrible three-man band match, as always. But no, everything else was pretty passable, good. I like the ending, too. Didn't think the Shield would actually come out on top, but they did. It's good.
Yeah, it was a great rally. It almost felt like that was just going to go on and on and on. It was just going to be another 20-minute beatdown from Triple H and his friends. But when the Shield got the energy back in their favor, it got exciting, and it got exciting real quick. So good on them. It certainly shows that they got that kind of power. What are you most excited for Extreme Rules?
Definitely the Evolution match. Definitely that.
Are you an old-school Evolution fan?
No, that is going to be great. I can tell. Like, I wasn't around when they were first a thing, but I can just tell this is going to be really good. I was always been a big fan of all three of those guys and the Shield too. So
the question I always like to ask on our go home show: are you sold on Extreme Rules? Are you planning on spending money for it? Are you planning on even watching it? And how do you plan on watching it?
Well, I don't usually pay for special events, but no. I mean, I guess this is no different. I probably will watch it, though. There's not a lot on the card, though, yet. Is there just the...
It feels really unpacked. There's a lot of stuff, but it's stuff that hasn't, you know, given a lot of steam to it. You know, you got, like, Paige versus Tamina, and you got the Rusev handicap match, and probably something else beyond that. You got the Intercontinental title match between Bad News Barrett and Big E. So there are a lot of matches out there, but just pretty much the only thing that seems to matter is the Evolution Shield match.
Yeah, that's true. But that's the other thing I forgot to mention. Forgot again. All right, cool.
Bad News Barrett or the Divas?
The Rusev thing. Again, okay. Like, another thing. I don't care enough about Xavier Woods and R-Truth, but it was neat to actually see them rally and get some offense in on Rusev.
Yeah, I mean, Rusev's been pretty unstoppable up to this point. They're already showing chinks in his armor, which can't, you know, bode well for his future. But, yeah, I mean, you can't completely make R-Truth and Xavier Woods look like jabronis. I mean, there's two of them and one of him, so they got to at least get some kind of offense in.
I liked Xavier Woods, but, you know, this is clearly they don't have anything for him right now, so they're just going to have him job out.
The only thing they seem to care about him is the fact that he has a master's degree, or he's studying for his master's degree. Like, nothing about him. They didn't even give him his own original theme music. They're just like, here's Brodus Clay's old theme song that we're also using for the Funkadactyls. Nothing good for him. So, Mike, let me ask you, what's your favorite part of Raw tonight, and what's your least favorite part of Raw tonight was?
Best part, probably, that I watched was the tag team match, and worst was the Los Matadores 3MB match. Just steady, Raw as usual.
All right. Tremendous call, Mike. Feel free to call back in anytime, man. We're here every single Raw.
All right, cool.
Have a good night, man. All right, another awesome call. Everyone out there, if you want to call and give your opinions about tonight's Raw and anything else that's going on in the world of wrestling, once again, area code 760-512-7247 is the number to get yourselves in the queue. We also got the chat room rolling in there. Brian the Brain talking about how they're called special events, just as our caller did. So freaking stupid that they have to change the name of it. I mean, I guess you can't continue calling it pay-per-views, but I'm still paying for it, aren't I?
Yeah, you're still paying.
It's tradition.
Maybe they're just kind of going against the whole idea of viewing them. They don't want people to view them anymore.
Oh, so they want to be TNA?
Yeah.
I hear TNA had a pay-per-view this weekend and nobody knew about it.
Well, there you go.
even Smart Guy Moment forgot to cover it.
We didn't forget.
Yeah, you guys are just lucky that I won't be there Friday when you record.
I don't think we're going to be doing a segment covering it. When was the last time we even did anything covering a TNA pay-per-view?
They only have four a year.
Dude, I thought they only had three. I thought they even cut it down less than that. Why are we talking about TNA? My goodness. All right, you know what? Tonight we had not one, but we had two title matches, the first of which was the Usos defending their tag team titles against Bri Baxel of all freaking tag teams. And you know what? To their credit, wasn't a half-bad match. It ended with Michael McGillicuddy going for the perfect plex and one of the Usos going for the body splash on him to get the pin after that. I thought it was a cool little combination of moves there. As the caller said, we had a leg injury feign throughout the match. It was not sold very well. It's not going to be their forte for the Usos. I don't think they should just stick to the high octane type stuff. Go ahead and get your guys' opinions about this match, though. The Usos with a title defense. Tony, are you happy for them, or do you think this should have been Rybaxel's time?
No, definitely not. I actually really liked this match. I thought it might have been possibly the best match of the night. I had to really take a look back at what happened and compare notes, but I liked it. A good start of Raw with the promo, then you need a good match to follow it up with, and you don't need everybody to be main event people to have a good match. You have the tag team division, which for a long time was in this kind of a realm where you had people like the Usos who weren't just two main event guys put together, and they were still able to entertain the crowd, and the crowd digs the Usos. They're not the best wrestlers in the world ever. They're not going to go down as, oh my God, we need to split these guys up because they're both so great. They could be great on their own or anything like that, but they are more than a solid tag team, and they're really holding this tag team together, tag team division together at this point. Because other people like Rybaxel, they wouldn't be able to do it on their own. And if this would have been Rybaxel against maybe Los Matadores or maybe even R-Truth and Xavier Woods or something like that, I don't think it would have been as good of a match. But I liked it a lot. I'm glad that the Usos won. I don't have a clue who can end up coming up next to challenge them, but thank God it isn't Rybaxel getting the win here.
I honestly don't know. I think you have to start bringing up the Ascension if you're going to talk about who's going to do that. But then who's left in the tag division? NXT. It's kind of a shame both tag divisions only have one tag team and they're both the champions.
Yeah, I don't know. They really need to start just pairing some other people up, I think.
Well, Wago, if I remember late last year, you were one of Ryback's final supporters saying you think there's still potential for this guy. Do you think that this should have been his time?
No, I still think there's potential for Ryback, but it means a trip down to NXT and returning as a babyface. But that's That's a long way from ever returning to the main event scene. As far as tonight goes, it was a good backwards and forwards tag match. I enjoyed it. And I'm someone that believes tag team wrestling, if pushed the right way, can become a main event level act in its own right. And the Usos are absolutely awesome. And I'd love to see the WWE get behind them a little more and continue centering the tag division around them. I think they're absolutely awesome.
Miguel, if I recall correctly, you have both of the Usos on your fantasy league team. So how are you feeling about them securing their tag titles in this matchup?
Whoop, whoop. Seriously, though, correct me if I'm wrong. Are the Usos set to wrestle at Extreme Rules?
I don't believe they've announced anything for them. They always could last minute. That's usually what they do with tag titles.
Well, putting your tag team titles on a pay-per-view? God, that's stupid. Just give it away on TV.
Well, at least we know it won't be on the pre-show.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I guess we've all come to that conclusion already. As for the matchup, I was kind of half paying attention to it. My parents called me during this matchup, so I was kind of on the phone and trying to pay attention. But I did notice Ryback a lot. They seemed to profile him a lot in this matchup, more so than Curtis Axel. And I'm kind of in the same boat with Steven. I still think that Ryback has something, and especially as of late with this whole just almost like he just doesn't care in a way. Because you just hear the nonsense that comes out of his mouth sometimes, especially last week when he was on commentary. Like, I could see a character like this getting over again if they just, you know, gave him the chance. But I do agree that, you know, he would have to take some time off and then come back as a babyface to try to, you know, wash that stink off. But it was what it was for a Ryback Curtis Axel matchup. It was a lot better than I expected. And yeah, like I said, I got points for this, but so I'm completely
happy. The season starts at Extreme Rules, but it does mean they hold on to the titles. So that's a good thing.
So why did you get my hopes if you're like, hey, you know, you picked the guys and they just won?
No, it wouldn't have been good if they just lost the titles to Ryback and Curtis Axel. That doesn't mean a good future for the Usos.
Fair enough.
Indeed. All right, so let's move on to the next match we had. We had Sheamus coming out, who, funny thing, this guy is coming out, and I'm thinking, man, if you want to talk about someone who has no direction right now, it's Sheamus. And sure enough, just as I'm having that thought cross my mind, he gets jumped from behind by Titus O'Neil, another guy who didn't really have any direction. So I'm like, this is fresh. You know, these are two guys who have never been in a feud before. Titus O'Neil, someone we still haven't honestly seen a true storyline with. I mean, I guess we had the split up of the primetime players, but that was came and went. And I don't recall if they even had a pay-per-view match. But this was also short-lived. Sheamus ended up getting the quick victory, despite the fact that Titus attacked him from behind, got a good beatdown on him. Sheamus gets the bro kick for the 1-2-3, and that's that. I don't think we're going to see anything more of this. Let's go around to you guys, get your thought, though. Miguel?
I agree. I can't think of anybody really. I mean, Sheamus to me is just one notch above guys like The Miz and ADR. I mean, he's a guy that, honestly, if it wasn't for his connections, he would be jobbing out night after night. He would basically get the jobber entrance where – actually, he got the jobber entrance, didn't he? The show started just as he was coming to the ring, or did he get the full entrance?
I did not write that down. I don't remember if anyone else caught that.
Yeah, I think they just came to back from break as his entrance was starting. So, yeah, he's on that weird cusp. I think he should really – be careful and you know, kind of redefine where his career is going, because he's in that danger zone, man. I'd hate to see him fall off a cliff like ADR and The Miz, but, you know, like you said, he's got nothing going for him. And I'm sorry, Titus O'Neil and Sheamus, even if that does go somewhere, that's a feud that just does nothing for me. You know, Titus O'Neil is one of those guys I'm kind of surprised is still working. I figured after WrestleMania he would get that big – you know how they do that big sweep of, you know, talent that they don't need that they just get rid of? I'm kind of shocked he wasn't caught up in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Tony, do you think that Titus O'Neil has a future after this, or is this the last we may see of him?
I don't know. This is a real, real odd situation, and it goes for Sheamus as well. On the optimistic side of things, I liked what they did here because it was something a little bit different from what we usually see. If they would have just had a normal match, I wouldn't have cared. But I did pay more attention to the fact that they ended it the way that they did. It wasn't Sheamus just squashing Titus O'Neil. It wasn't Titus attacking him, and then Sheamus just hulks up, and then he celebrates after the match. They actually made it seem like he got lucky that he could hit a powerful move, and that's the reason why he ends up winning. So that did some favors for Titus O'Neil. But I have never been a big fan of Sheamus, and Titus O'Neil, he won me over more than I ever thought that he would, but I still don't think that he has that much to him. I think he's one of those guys that he comes and he goes and really doesn't make that much of an impact, and he can't be relied upon to actually take it to the next level. I thought he was great in the primetime players, and they shouldn't have gotten rid of that. He's not good enough on his own. But a feud with Sheamus? Hey, Sheamus isn't doing anything right now, and neither is Titus. Why not put the two together and see what happens? It might go south. It might do nothing for either guy. It might even hurt them in some way. But it might give them something to do long enough until they can figure out what to do with them. And if that's all you need to keep these guys going for Raw and Main Event and SmackDown and whatever the case may be, not on pay-per-views, I don't want to see any pay-per-view matches between these two, then it's probably a good thing. And I guess we're just going to have to see where it comes from here. But at least it was something different, so that's optimistic.
Wago, I know you probably just love both of these guys, so what do you think about this ordeal?
I'm in favor of putting guys out there in a minor feud just to get them on TV and do something with them. Sometimes you strike gold, and not every feud has to be some majorly important one. It's just between two guys that I couldn't give a shit about. Sheamus, I think, is no better than an Intercontinental title guy, and Titus O'Neil is enhancement talent to me, so Titus served his purpose by getting his ass kicked by Sheamus. I don't think it's going to go any further than this. Maybe it'll be the situation where they're just feeding Sheamus the same guy for a few weeks like they did with the Rhodes Scholars just to keep him over and doing something. But I don't know if they're going to continue with this. I hope not.
I'm going to pull from the chat room. Wrestling Shoot Hour says Sheamus needs to turn heel. I like Sheamus, but not what he's doing right now. He thinks O'Neil should go back to NXT, get him off TV, and repackage him completely as a monster. And he also thinks that breaking up Titus O'Neil and Darren Young was a mistake. And do you guys agree with that? Do you think that they should have kept the primetime players, or will this ultimately be the good in the long run? We just haven't seen it yet.
Definitely should have kept them together.
Just look at what Darren Young's doing right now.
Yeah, there was no benefit. I was a big fan of the primetime players. I thought they were awesome. It wasn't that I thought you could give them a tag team run, not be a long one, but they're guys who you could have put the tag belts on. And now they're just down a tag team in a division that's losing tag teams constantly. So it's hurt the tag division, and it's hurt both guys. It served no purpose. It was like when they broke up the Hart Dynasty with D.H. Smith and Tyson Kidd. It served no fucking purpose.
Now, Brian the Brain is telling me that Darren Young is injured. I think I do remember hearing that. He twisted his ankle or something at a house show.
Yeah, see, well, if he still had a tag team partner, he could end up holding up the end of the bargain.
even if it's Titus O'Neil?
Yeah, sure. Why not? He needs to go to face Ryback-Axel. Who cares?
True that. All right, everyone, if you're just tuning in, just letting you know, you are listening to the NPR Raw Post Show on Mega Powers Radio. This is the most interactive post-Raw experience out there. If you want to call in, give your opinions about tonight's Raw show, Extreme Rules, the upcoming special event, or anything else going on in the wrestling world, you could do so by dialing area code 760-512-7247. If you see the other phone number on the broadcast page, that one works as well. Get yourself in line to give your opinions. You can also dial in with the Skype icon at the top of the page if you prefer to use that method. And of course, the chat room is rolling as well. We're going to move on to the next segment we had, which featured Dolph Ziggler making amends with X-Men First Class star Hugh Jackman. First off, let me ask all you guys. Many of us are involved with another project known as FanboysAnonymous.com. And if you haven't checked that out, be sure to go and check that website out for everything geek. We're all, of course, fans of things like X-Men and various other comic books and superhero franchises. So let me ask you guys, what's your thoughts of were the trailer that we got and them bringing this in, you know, this crossover with nerdy stars and all that? Tony, why don't you start us off, since you are also the leader of Fanboys Anonymous?
I love X-Men. They were some of the favorite superheroes of mine as a kid. So these X-Men movies are something that I am always super into. And Days of Future Past looks so fucking awesome. I love it. Bring in Hugh Jackman on board. Hey, I mean, I like Dolph Ziggler. I think Hugh Jackman's a good actor. Wolverine's my favorite X-Men probably, and the movie looks awesome, and I love wrestling. So it's all things I like all in one. Even Damian Sandow, I'm a big fan of him too. And obviously Magneto is one of my favorites as well. So they had a funny little segment here that I liked, and it went a little bit too overboard, a little too long. I would have kind of cut it short, but I like this kind of stuff. I would have liked it more, obviously, as a kid, because then, you know, you get into that stuff a little bit more. But Hugh Jackman looked like Bad News Barrett, didn't he? Anybody else think about that?
No.
No.
I think if you see pictures, you might
agree. I think you're just racist against British people.
Yeah.
But Hugh Jackman's not British.
Oh, he's not?
No, he's Australian.
Oh. Well, they're a British colony.
Now who's racist? yeah, this is just a bunch of things that I like all together in one shot, so I can't say anything really negative about it.
Miguel, how about you, man? How'd you like all this?
I think I made the comments. I made two comments, one on my Facebook and I think one to you directly in terms of the segment. The first one being, every time I see this trailer, it just makes me wish that Fox could sign a deal with Disney to make these movies part of continuity, because I want to put my all into this, because I used to love the X-Men movies and I was really burned by 3. And then when Marvel started doing the Phase 1 stuff, I kind of fell out of the series, because there's always that thought in the back of your mind that it doesn't matter what they do in this, it's not part of official continuity. And I want this to be a part of official continuity, because I want to just care about this 100%, because I love the Sentinels. I'm a huge fan of the whole, crossing the old continuity with the new one with First Class. I want to be all in on this, man, but there's just something about it that I can't get all 100% in on this. And like I said, it goes back to the whole it not being official continuity.
Now, when you say official continuity, you mean with like the Avengers franchise series of movies?
Yeah, with Marvel's official movie continuity.
No, you're just... you're picking it that way now. Why can't you think of it the other way around, that the Avengers movies aren't in the real canon with the X-Men movies?
Because the Phase 1 movies are overseen by Marvel. Marvel doesn't oversee the X-Men movies or the Spider-Man movies. They don't.
That's a good answer.
Sony and Fox own the rights to that. Well, Sony with Spider-Man and Fox with X-Men. So the X-Men movies can do whatever they want. They don't have to worry about being a part of, you know, crossing over with Iron Man or anything like that. And that, I know it's a minor thing, but as a geek, it is something that is always going to be in the back of my mind when I think about this. But I plan on seeing this movie. This is one of the big summer movies that I honestly – this and Godzilla. These are the two big movies I want to see this year.
Hmm. Wago, how about you? I mean, you're the least – okay. Please, go ahead.
And the other one I made to you was, I want those Magneto pajamas that Damian Sandow was wearing. I want those. I the cape and all, man. I'd even wear the hat to bed. I want that.
Hopefully you can find one that fits you a little bit better than it fit Damian Sandow tonight. Wago, what'd you think about this? I mean, you're probably the least nerd-centric of us, I would say. So how'd this hit you?
Yeah, I'm an anime fan. I'm not a big superhero buff. So I couldn't probably appreciate it as much as you guys, but I did get a bit of a chuckle out of it. It kind of went from, this is kind of neat, so this is kind of awkward, and then kind of
it went on a little too long.
Then kind of plateaued somewhere in the middle by the end. So I think what saved it is I can't remember the celebrity's name now.
Hugh Jackman.
He's one of those celebrities that you can put out there in front of a crowd, and you can work it. There's certain celebrities you put out there, and they're just fucking awful. So he's the right guy to have out there.
I think it's because Hugh Jackman's actually a WWE fan, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he's one of the few – I think he's actually a genuine – he actually watches the product. And you can tell with guys like that, you know, the ones that actually know what to do in there and have a sense of the crowd and things like that. They kind of do better than just, you know, you bring on a guy that knows nothing and they're just kind of stiff and awkward.
Hmm. Yeah, indeed. So let's move on out of this, guys. Let's talk about the next matchup we had. It was Jack Swagger versus Cesaro. Not wasting any time on this one. We're not going to save it for a pay-per-view. We're going to do it on Raw. Before we even got to the matchup, though, we had Paul Heyman out on the stage giving a excellent knock-knock joke with using my name, Mike, but leading it into Mike client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
Were you hoping deep down inside he would say Mike Payton?
A little bit. But anyway, this match kind of came and went. I didn't really catch too much out of it until the very end, where Paul Heyman caused a distraction by the mustache ride, grabbing onto Zeb Coulter's mustache and just carrying him around for a little bit. Jack Swagger goes to try to save Coulter, but Cesaro grabs him from behind with a bridging German suplex, or I guess in his case, would it just be a suplex? Now, either way, he gets the pin. 1, 2, 3. Cesaro getting the victory in the first of what I'm sure is going to be a series of matches between these two guys. Not bad. I still don't like Cesaro's music. I think they got to do something about that, but not bad. Not bad at all. Tony, what'd you think?
Yeah, this was passable. There's no positive things that I can really give them a lot of praise for, and no really negative things that I can point out. I really was hoping that these guys wouldn't have had matches on TV and would have had some kind of a pay-per-view match instead, partially because I don't like the involvement of RVD and all this kind of stuff, because it's RVD, and partially just because I think that they skip things a lot, and you could have gotten a pay-per-view match out of these two and then done something else, maybe at Payback, and that's a little bit of a shame, but you know what, it's all for Cesaro to get better, and he's looking good.
Mm. Miguel?
I kind of dug this. I like the whole manager shenanigans. You know, I think this is why we need more managers in the WWE for stuff like this. It really gave what could be a very honestly bland series of matches. I think this could really give this program the spice that it needs. I like Cesaro. I'm really behind him. I really do wish, and it's not because – and I don't think I'm doing it for the same reasons that a regular Mark would, but I really do wish Paul Heyman would talk more about Cesaro than the whole Brock Lesnar thing. I know that's the point, but it is just really annoying. The matchup itself was nothing special. I hope it leads to something bigger at the pay-per-view.
Hmm. Wayo?
I wasn't a fan of their match. I did enjoy the bridging suplex. I don't know if he's going to use that as a finisher or if it was just one of those one-offs since he was distracted. I think the best part about this whole thing was either Paul Heyman's promo and his little joke or him grabbing Zeb's mustache.
I always get worried whenever they rough up Zeb a little bit. I mean, he's in rough shape. You know, he's an old man. He's a veteran.
Did something happen to him recently? He was hobbling to the ring quite badly.
He's been doing that for a while. That pretty much ever since he came back.
Maybe I only just caught on to it, but yeah, he was hobbling pretty bad.
Well, usually you didn't notice because the Real Americans had that awesome entrance where they charged the ring and threw the flags and stuff. So usually your eyes were concentrated elsewhere while he hobbled.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we can have that to look forward to. We had a couple shots, I just want to mention this now, of Kane's mask in a glass case just sitting there ominously in complete silence while they showed it too. Kind of interesting. I like how they set that up there. We had a match between Alberto Del Rio and Cody Rhodes. I was happy to see Alberto Del Rio got no entrance whatsoever. He was just standing there in the ring, not even getting any part of his music, with Cody Rhodes on his way out to the ring. I thought there was a funny line. JBL says, brothers have been fighting since Cain and Abel, in response to the whole deal with Cody Rhodes and Goldust and Cody Rhodes having a little bit of a disagreement. And when he said that, I was imagining a bunch of wrestling fans going, Cain and Abel? Since when is The Undertaker called Abel? Yeah.
That was a joke that I would have made.
No.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Del Rio gets the win with the cross arm breaker. Nothing significant going on here. Cody Rhodes continues his frustration, and we can only imagine eventually will be pushed to the breaking point. Tony, is that where this is going, or do you think there's going to be try to be a swerve somewhere in this?
I don't think it's heading to breaking point. I don't think they're doing that pay-per-view anymore. I wish that they would, though, by the way. Side note, that was awesome. I don't want Cody to turn heel. I think that turning him heel is going to end up doing more harm than it is good. I want him to stay a babyface and for them to actually just give him something to fucking do. And then that'll actually work. Heel Cody Rhodes against babyface Goldust, we've seen it like 3 times before on Royal Rumbles and everything. Nobody's going to be excited about that. But maybe a heel Goldust against a babyface Cody Rhodes, that would be something people might actually get behind. And if you're going to split a tag team up, don't follow the same shit that you've been doing with a bunch of them, like the primetime players that we've talked about. where you split them up because you just want one of the people to do something, and then you go, man, well, you got to put effort into that. I mean, I don't really know about that. I hate that idea. And if all signs are pointing to that kind of a result, I don't want to see it, no matter what the outcome is. Even if they were to have a really good match and then the match turns out to be nothing and we had a really good match that everybody can look forward to rewatching in the past, I'd rather just not see it at all.
You will, at the least out of this, Tony, you got to be happy with Del Rio getting the victory with him on your fantasy league team and all. just figured I'd remind you about that.
I'm happy that he didn't get the entrance. How about that?
Okay. Miguel, what do you think of our development with the Cody Rhodes attitude?
I think they missed their run. I think they should have done this while the Rhodes were hot, just so they can continue that heat with, you know, this feud. But they let the tag team itself cool down, and I want to care about this feud, but I just don't. I mean, it's going to be interesting, and I think maybe the biggest problem is we haven't seen really any spotlight being put on it. We haven't seen a moment where one brother has had to talk down the other or anything like that. And I think once that happens, this thing might pick up. But as is, I'm there's just not much heat for me on it.
I have to absolutely agree with you. If they had went and pulled the trigger on this pre-WrestleMania and had this going into Mania, I think it would have been much more compelling than it is at this point. At this point, like we were saying before, the only tag team that has any steam is the Usos. The Brotherhood, no one cares anymore. Let's take it over to Wago, though. What are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I definitely agree. They kind of just left the Rhodes Brothers in obscurity after losing the tag team titles to the New Age Outlaws, which I was happy that they lost because I'm a New Age Outlaws mark, but I think they should have been kept in the division for a while. Now it's kind of just out of nowhere that, hey, the Rhodes Brothers are back, and they're gone. So, missed opportunity, and I don't like the idea of face Goldust versus heel Cody Rhodes. The only way I'd enjoy it, I would have preferred it the other way around, with maybe Goldust dropping, like actually getting rid of the Goldust gimmick and fighting Cody Rhodes as Dustin Rhodes or something, to make it more of a personal family thing. But
I still think he should have went corporate. Dustin Rhodes, put on a suit, take off the makeup.
Yeah, I totally
would. Or leave the makeup on while he's in a suit, whichever.
Yeah, whatever works. Either way, it would have been better. I think Cody Rhodes works better as a babyface, or at least he does right now, because everything Cody can do as a heel, I think I've seen.
I think he would be a bigger star because of it.
I think the peak of his heel run was the disfigured mask gimmick, which I think they dropped way too soon, too.
You didn't like the mustache Cody Rhodes heel? No. Everyone out there, we invite you to join the conversation. Tell us what you think about what's going on with Cody Rhodes. If you think that he should be the babyface in this, or if you think that maybe it's time to give up on Cody Rhodes, he's had enough chances, or whatever else you think about him, or whatever else went down on tonight's Raw, area code 760-512-7247 is the number to get yourselves in line to dial into the NPR Raw Post Show here on Mega Powers Radio. Let's continue the conversation here with our panelists, though. We had Alexander Rusev in action tonight against Xavier Woods, which is so dumb. I mean, he's facing both him and R-Truth at the pay-per-view. Why have him face either of them tonight? Like, what a waste. Anyway, this match never really ends up having anything happen. R-Truth interferes. It ends in just a bunch of confusion. Alexander Rusev actually ends up getting knocked out of the ring. He's held back by Lana from going back after them. The first sign of weakness we've really seen from Rusev, and I think that's a shame. He's only been around a month, and already they're going to do this. Well, he's been around a little longer than a month, I guess, but he's only been actually wrestling for less than a month. So, well, I don't know. Hopefully he'll make up for it by getting a good victory in the handicap match at Extreme Rules. I still think that this guy has something special, and I hope they don't screw it up before it even really gets the momentum going with it. Lana, though, I think got a tremendous reaction tonight. Another thing I kind of worry about is her getting that same thing that happened to Summer Rae, where she kind of became more popular than Fandango, and they separated them, and then Alexander Rusev gets stuck with Layla. God. Well, let's go around and get your guys' opinions on this. We'll start with Wago, because I know how much you love Rusev.
Ugh. You know what? I'm glad that he had a sign of weakness being showed, not because I dislike him, but because I think at least it makes tells a story that, hey, the guy can be hurt going into this match, and he might be a little more than just a fucking squash match, which is going to amount to, but hey, at least it puts a little more interest into it, but there's no appeal to Rusev until he fights a real challenge, maybe a Sheamus or something, but I'm already bored of him squashing guys, especially the same two fucking guys. I watched him kill Xavier Woods every week on NXT. I don't need to see it on Raw.
Oh my god. They seriously face each other like, what, 3 or 4 times in NXT?
So you can see why I'm fucking tired of his act already.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. No, they'll find other people for him to take apart, though. Anyways, take it over to Miguel. What'd you think about Rusev's performance tonight?
On the one hand, I can't really say much bad about him because he's on my fantasy team. In fact, I hope
one round draft pick.
Yeah. I hope he keeps doing squash matches for the next 7 or 8 years, or at least the next year, you know, because that'll guarantee me points. As a matchup, everything about this and beyond does nothing for me. Xavier Woods means less than nothing to me. R-Truth means just about as much. And Rusev just does not impress me. You know, and the fact that they gave him less of an offense this week, you know, giving his opponent more of it, drops him down another notch. I mean, he only just started wrestling jobbers on Raw, what, 2-3 weeks ago? I think it's a little bit too soon to maybe show some chinks in the armor. I think he needs at least one pay-per-view matchup before you show how he can actually be beaten. You know, you're trying to build this guy up as an unstoppable force. You can't all of a sudden show that he can be stopped.
At the same time, though, and I think I said this before, there is two people and against one. So maybe just like a slight bit of weakness. It was only just knocking him out of the ring. It wasn't like they pinned him. It wasn't like they even kept him down on his shoulders for any period of time. So maybe we're overreacting. Maybe it's something. It's good that they're doing something different as opposed to like, gosh, do you remember how long they just kept doing squash matches for both Ryback and Brodus Clay at the same time? It felt like they were never going to give those guys real matches.
There is one thing that I forgot to mention. As far as this feud goes, the only way that I see a shining light at the end of the tunnel is if R-Truth turns heel, because I think R-Truth is such a misused talent, and if losing in a handicap match can maybe have him turn on Xavier and give him something to do, I'd be fine with this match existing.
Wasn't Xavier Woods a heel, though? Correct me if I'm wrong. He's either a heel on the main roster or on NXT, but I know he's supposed to be a heel.
I never remember him being a heel.
No, you totally just, like, smoked some crack and made that up.
maybe I dreamt it while watching Chrisley Knows Best or something. But in terms of the squashes, I mean, I'm okay with a nice long build up with squash matches. I think we need more of these, actually. The problem with WWE is if they lose focus on you, you're pretty much DOA. I mean, it happened with Brodus Clay. It shouldn't have happened with Ryback. Unfortunately, it did. But I hope Rusev goes on for success because, like I said, he was my draft pick.
Tony, let's hear what your opinions are about the current status of the Rusev character.
He's a fine potato. But I don't really care too much about Rusev at this point. He needs to do something else. Squash matches aren't going to do much for me.
No, we're really in an era past the squash matches. I think the character like him still could have potential, but I think it's good they're rushing past just the continuous squash matches. So if that's what the plan is, good. If they're just putting weakness in him to have him phased out quicker, then that's not good.
Just do the squash matches on Superstars or main event. Nobody watches them anyway.
Brian the Brain, in response to Miguel asking if Xavier Woods was a heel, he says, no, that's Tiger Woods, that's a heel.
Of course.
It's going to be signed to TNA.
Oh, gosh, don't say it. Don't give him any ideas. Actually, I don't think they can afford him. No. All right, well, we head into our next matchup, which is continuing this story with frickin' Hornswoggle and El Torito. As a matter of fact, we learned that the two of them will be kicking things off at the pre-show for Extreme Rules in what they're dubbing a WLC match. So I'm assuming they're going to use a stepladder to grab something, and it's going to be a midget fighting Extreme Rules match. Okay, whatever, it's the pre-show. It's fine, I guess. We had the matchup between the Los Matadores and Drew McIntyre and Heath Slater. And three-man band got the victory, baby! Yeah! Woo! Party! Nobody?
Nah.
We're all in shock that three-man band actually won a matchup.
Can't be happy. God, if you can't get excited in a three-man band victory, what can you get excited for anymore? Are you guys wrestling fans? What the hell's wrong with you? Well, I mean, how are you going to get a gender face turn if he doesn't get some momentum behind him? He was unfairly attacked by that bull tonight, all right? I don't know why those fans were cheering it, all right? That bull had a heel turn. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that was some bullshit, wasn't it?
God damn it, Tony.
Tony, why don't you take us over first for this?
Yeah, it was some bullshit, wasn't it? I was just kidding. this sucks. I don't like this at all. It's so stupid. The WLC match. I don't even like TLC matches. I've gone on so many tirades about how that's stupid on its own, and they're going to have a WLC match.
But, Tony, that's a pun that you would make.
Oh, it is, yeah, but still, my God, I hate myself, so that works. I don't want to see this at all. I mean, I had two different things that I was thinking about could have been on the pre-show. One of them, this is before they ended up doing Monday Night Raw. One was Usos against Ryback, which that was a good match tonight. So that would have been an awesome pre-show if they would have done the exact same match. And the other one was if they were going to build something up with Damian Sandow and Dolph Ziggler. I thought, hey, maybe they'll have another match with those two, and I'd be down for that. And then they're like, by the way, the pre-show is going to be the midgets. Oh, my God, my heart hurts.
Now, what are you going to do if they actually have a good match?
If they have a good match, I'll give them credit. And then, you know, I'll just have to eat my words and say they had a good match. But, man, what's the likelihood that's going to happen?
Well, if you have to eat your words, at least it'll be a small meal.
It's an appetizer.
Oh, we're on fire tonight, aren't we?
Oh, Wago, why don't you take over on this?
Well, assessing this whole situation, there is only one thing that I can say to really some of my thoughts.
Okay. Miguel, why don't you take over then?
You know what? I'm willing to give this feud credit. I've always said that, you know, they really should give their undercard more meaningful feuds, and if a midget, you know, on a ladder matchup is what it takes to get these guys on TV, I'm all for it. I mean, there's something so stupid about this feud that it kind of harkens back to the Attitude Era. Like, honestly, this would be something that would be a Raw feud that you would see back then. So I'm okay with it. Yeah, it's dumb, but that's the point. It's supposed to be dumb. I think they understand how ridiculous the whole premise is.
You know, it's funny you say this would exist in the Attitude Era, because it totally would, because in the late 90s, midgets were big. I think we had that conversation on the show before.
Yeah.
About how there was like a midget phase back then with like Vern Troyer and the one who hung out with Kid Rock. And or was that Vern Troyer? I don't know. But then the other one that was in Me, Myself, and Irene. There was a whole bunch of midgets at that point. So we're having a midget revival.
Yeah. I mean, if, you know, as long as they don't get taken down by the PC police, then, you know, I'm all for it.
Does that mean they would get taken to small claims court?
Little
pig, hey, give them credit. If this ends up taking off, they could be huge.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, before we get any more of these offensive puns to some people, let's keep moving things along. We have Stephanie McMahon out to the ring to apologize to Daniel Bryan. They've been advertising this the whole night, so you knew something had to be going down with this segment. She invites out Daniel Bryan, who comes out with Brie Bella. Stephanie McMahon starts offering her apology. However, Daniel Bryan does not accept it. Stephanie McMahon tries to sweeten the pot a little bit by saying, well, listen, I'll give Brie Bella a Divas title match so you two can be holding hands, champion and champion. And before we get that matchup, though, we get another look at that glass case that was holding Kane's mask before. But now it's empty. We get a Divas title match, our second title match of the night. Surprisingly, this was a really stacked show. When you just looked at the preview of it, of all the things they had on there, it was really, really packed. But yeah, we got Brie Bella versus Paige, our new Divas champion, her first time defending that title. And I guess you could call it a success because this match ended with Kane sending off his flames in the middle of the match and him climbing up out of the ring. I always love whenever they do that, Kane or The Undertaker popping up through the ring and attempting to drag Brie Bella into the hole with him. However, he was unsuccessful because Daniel Bryan was there to make the save. The match ended in a double DQ or a single DQ. I don't know. It didn't really matter. Kane beats up Daniel Bryan for a little bit, sending him back, being carried by referees. And skipping ahead to when we come back from commercial, we see Stephanie McMahon running to the back where Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella are sitting with the MT. Brie Bella shouting at Stephanie McMahon, "Get out, you bitch." Powerful words from Brie, probably the most I ever liked Brie throughout this whole entire segment here where she came out there supporting her man, doing the yes chants. I almost got a little bit excited for her going into this title match, even though I really did not want her to take it off of Paige so quickly. I thought this was all pretty well done, and I think this was the best thing they could have done for this Daniel Bryan Kane match. We'll go around to you guys, though. Tony?
You know what this reminded me of? The 90s. Not necessarily the Attitude Era, but the New Generation Era. Undertaker used to do this kind of stuff, and it was awesome back then, so I can't say that it was anything other than cool now. If it was, you know, fine then, it's fine now. And this is something where this feud isn't – that's not going to save this feud. No, I should say it that way. It's not going to be something that everybody's really going to be looking forward to going into Extreme Rules. Obviously, WWE even knows that. They know that the whole selling point is the Shield and Evolution match. But that being said, they needed to do something to make Daniel Bryan have a worthwhile competitor. And having Kane come out last week and destroy him makes him look powerful. Having him come out this week and attack Brie makes this personal. So now they actually have something built towards this pay-per-view that on a throwaway pay-per-view, if you could say it that, by not being one of the big four or big five, depends on your point of view, it's more than adequate. And I don't know if I really would have changed much to this. Maybe I would have cut it a little bit shorter and made it so Brie got out a little bit quicker. She kind of stuck around the ring a little while and they kind of retraced their steps a little bit. But maybe that even wasn't in the plan and that's just something that happened naturally. Whatever the case may be, I think segment-wise, this was a pretty good idea. Paige, I don't know if that's a good idea, though. I think throwing her into this might be the wrong idea. I don't think they're going to really, you know, keep Paige and Brie into like some kind of a feud or whatever, but she hasn't been doing much to really come off as a babyface for this crowd. She never slaps the hands of the fans. She kind of comes out and looks like she's a heel in a lot of ways. Her theme music is sort of geared towards heels. And this is another thing that just seemed like a heel would have been a better fit. Like maybe Stephanie should have put Tamina in the match and it could have been, well, you know, Tamina's got that shot, but maybe you can face the challenge, the winner of the match and get a title shot down the line past Extreme Rules if you can beat Tamina. And that could have put a little bit of heat on Tamina instead. I think that would have been a better way to do it.
Yeah, because who even like knows that Tamina has a title match coming up this Sunday?
They didn't do any graphics for it, I don't think, tonight.
If they did, it certainly didn't matter.
Right.
They didn't talk about it, and they certainly didn't show Tamina at all tonight.
No, not at all. So I think that would have helped her out a lot more.
Indeed. Miguel, how do you think about all this?
Well, first off, let me just say, in terms of Paige, I think they're starting to feel out what's best for her as a character. I agree that I think they bringing her up as a babyface was a mistake, but I think slowly but surely you're going to start seeing her transform more into a heel. I think the fact that they really did rush her up to the main roster, honestly, not in terms of that she's not ready, but the fact that they didn't have much of a plan for it. If you see what they were building up for on NXT beforehand, it really does show that they kind of just brought her up spur of the moment. So I think right now they're kind of feeling it out, and I do think you're going to see her transform into a heel, which I think she is much better suited for. In terms of the whole segment, I have one gripe. Otherwise, I think the segment was perfect. The week before, you had Daniel Bryan take three tombstone piledrivers, one on a steel steps and one on the table. Your spine should look like Brian Pillman's ankle. You should not be able to walk right now. You should be, it should just be shattered beyond repair. The fact that they had him come back after taking all that really kind of annoys me and really kind of throws me out of it a little bit. I think, honestly, they did not need him in that segment too much. You could have written around it so that you could have just had Brie there where, you know, Stephanie is just picking on Brie and it gets to the same ending. But the fact that they brought Brian back so quickly after, you know, this horrific beatdown, it bothers me. It really shows a lack of realism. Otherwise, I think the segment was great. I mean, I like the gimmicky him coming out from under the ring. It was gimmicky enough, but not so much that you had, like, you know, Kane dragging Brie under the ring and then fire shoots out of the hole, you know, which we saw with Taker at one point. And the matchup I thought was actually really good. You can tell Brie's been taught by Daniel Bryan how to wrestle because it was a better quality Divas matchup than we normally get. So overall, I liked it, aside from the Daniel Bryan nitpicking.
Mm-hmm. Wago, what did you think about this whole attack from Kane on Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella?
Well, as far as the match goes, I wasn't a big fan of it, and I think that's more to do with Paige not having the best talent to work with, and I think she's not going to get a good match, really, until we see it with Tamina. As far as the attack goes, well, I was a big fan of it. I thought they've made Kane feel relevant again, and they do such a good job of reviving his character, because they've done it several times after he's been in obscurity. I love that Daniel Bryan, like, hit him with a fucking wrench and he just sits up. It's Monster Kane. It's awesome. I like it. And Kane looks like a beast and Daniel Bryan looks like the underdog, and that's all you need to tell in this story. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do at Extreme Rules. I don't know if it's going to be an Extreme Rules match or what gimmick the match has got. In fact, for a pay-per-view called Extreme Rules, I don't even know what half the fucking matches are.
I believe it is indeed an Extreme Rules match. As far as some of these other ones, I don't know. I don't know what the Shield Evolution match is. I don't think the Divas match has any kind of stipulation. I guess the fact that the Rusev match is a handicap match, that's extreme enough.
Yeah, I'm kind of at a loss to what the heck's actually going on. It seems like I hope this is not going to be a trend with them moving to the network, but they're just going to get lazy with the promotion side of it. But overall, the segment was well done, and it told the story that it needed to do. So, yay.
All right. Well, let's move on then. We had Bad News Barrett out, having one of my favorite bits that he had. He's up on his podium with his gavel. He gets attention of the crowd, and he tells them WWE's little slogan that they have at the beginning of every show is then, now, forever. However, when he looks at Rob Van Dam, he only sees then. I thought that was a fantastic line from him. This is, of course, preparing for his match against Rob Van Dam, which is the finals to become the number one contender for the Intercontinental title against Big E at Extreme Rules. Now, am I the one who's gotten the feeling like becoming the number one contender in this tournament means more than being the Intercontinental title holder itself?
I kind of got that impression, too.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Like, Big E seems so inconsequential.
Being a jobber at this point has more lineage than the IC belt does.
All the great jobbers in history, like the Brooklyn Brawler and Barry Horowitz, have led to this day.
Alberto Del Rio, The Miz. At least The Miz main evented a WrestleMania.
Hey, Barry Horowitz got a mention on Raw tonight.
Did he?
Yeah, JBL said with the 3MB match, Barry Horowitz is turning in his grave and he's not even dead.
Oh, goodness. Well, we have that matchup, as I said, the finals for that tournament. Cesaro ends up interfering. I believe there was some type of backstage thing where Zeb Coulter approached Rob Van Dam because they had a common enemy or something. I don't know. This whole thing's kind of confusing, blurring all these lines across each other. But Cesaro interferes in the match, trying to cause the loss for Rob Van Dam. And it does so, allowing Wade Barrett to hit the Bullhammer. Jack Swagger comes out after the match, attacks Cesaro, and also begins attacking RVD. And this whole thing was just really wacky. The only thing I really got out of it is Bad News Barrett's the number one contender. And I would pretty much say all signs point to him being the Intercontinental Champion come Sunday, which certainly, you know, makes me happy with him being on my fantasy team. And also just because I am a Bad News Barrett fan. Let's go around and get your guys' thoughts on that. Miguel, is this the chosen one for the Intercontinental title, or is this all for naught?
It's the IC belt. I mean, I want to get excited, but that belt is poison to whoever holds it. I mean, we were talking about Big E, how much we were so excited for him to have the belt, and this was going to lead to big things, and he hasn't done much of all, actually. I mean, you look at before he had the belt, and they were jobbing out anybody who held that title. It's just, Dean Ambrose's U.S. title reign means more, and that's only because he reluctantly has passed, what was it, MVP's record of longest reigning title lineage?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think they made a deal of it online that Dean Ambrose like just passed MVP's number of days held as the U.S. champ, which is easy to do when you've only ever defended it three times a year. But my point is that it doesn't matter who wins. I don't see it meaning anything for their careers. In fact, I think it's going to actually do more damage to Bad News Barrett if he wins. In terms of the Cesaro Swagger RVD thing that's going around, it kind of makes me wish Ricardo Rodriguez was back managing RVD and we could get a manager three-way.
They never really explained like why he's not with him now. Or maybe they just did it in Spanish and I didn't hear it.
They need to bring him back. I want to see him go up against having to deal with the shenanigans against Heyman and Zeb Coulter. That'd be fun.
I think that the way that they're writing it off is RVD, the only thing that he does do is announce himself anyway, so he didn't really need Ricardo. He's just going to come out there, go RVD, and, you know, he'll cut corners.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, Tony, why don't you take over then?
Loving some Bad News Barrett, and it seems like the crowd is far more behind him than Big E, who wasn't even on tonight, I think.
They showed him backstage looking at the cameras.
It doesn't count. Screw that. And JBL, really, I mean, another thing that he had mentioned throughout the night, JBL's awesome, but he really just sold this as, like, isn't Bad News Barrett fucking cool? And the hell with Big E. He was just like, Big E, like, watch out, because you're going to fucking lose the title at Extreme Rules, which is going to happen. And you know what? I like Big E, but they haven't been giving him shit to do. And if keeping the title is going to keep that going, we need something different. And Bad News Barrett's awesome right now, so I can't think of anybody better to give the Intercontinental title to at the moment. And that should be either a decent match or a good match with an awesome outcome.
Wago, what'd you think about it?
I remember,
know you're a big Barrett fan.
I remember thinking back to when Big E first got hot, and I was like, I could see this guy being a flash in the pan, and that's exactly what it looks like it could be. It's going to be. Wade Barrett is just absolutely awesome, and his gimmick is made to be a face gimmick. The fans are into it now, and I expect him to win the championship, and it's a crime if he doesn't. As far as this match goes, it was a typical Rob Van Dam match. I know you guys always say it, and I have to agree, but the interference at the end made it a little more exciting, and saw Wade Barrett hit the ball mallet and took home the victory. So I'm looking forward to seeing Wade Barrett versus Big E. One, I want to see what type of match quality they'll have. I don't think they've wrestled before. And I just want to see the title actually go to a change of hands with someone with some momentum, and maybe they can switch him over to a face and have him face like the Alberto Del Rios and the Miz's and build up a decent title reign with that. I really think maybe if Dean Ambrose loses the U.S. title in this handicap match they're advertising on Raw, maybe they can unify the belts in the future and have Wade Barrett be the one to do it.
Well, that might not be a bad idea. Brian the Brain in the chat room saying they should always have tournaments for number one contenders. I partially agree with you. I don't know if tournaments are always the way to go, but they should always have something that signifies who your number one contender is rather than just who the champion happens to have beef with at that particular moment.
I don't think you should do tournaments all the time because I think they lose their prestige and they lose their
No, but you could have like a ranking system, or you could do a battle royal, or at least like a number one contenders matchup that determines who the number one contender is. Something that shows that person earned that spot and wasn't just given to it because they took that person's lunch and shat in their bag or something.
Well, you see people like get wins over the champion all the time, and by my logic, that should make them the number one contender, but that's never the case. So they just need to pay attention to the booking they're doing.
I'm sorry, I'm reading something in the chat room here saying wrestling shoot hours saying why not do like in WCW where whoever wins the C title or the US title becomes the number one contender for the world heavyweight title. No, don't do that, because then you have no point to the divisions. Then you're just rushing every single person who's in a mid-card title into that main event. You got to have things separate.
Yeah, I got no issue with the title holder earning his way up and facing champion versus champion, but I don't like that being an automatic number one contendership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even like people would say that for like the King of the Ring. I don't think even that's the case. I think the Royal Rumble's enough to have something like that. Now you even have the Money in the Bank too. I don't think you need anything else that guarantees you a title shot in that sense. But yeah, I think I got everyone's opinion on this, right? The Bad News Barrett. Miss anybody?
I like mallets.
Jesus Christ, answer me, guys. Jesus. All right, well, let's head into our main event then. We had Roman Reigns against Randy Orton, preview of The Shield versus Evolution. Surprisingly, though, before we got into the actual match, what? Oh, fucking. Roman Reigns and Randy Orton, a preview of The Shield versus Evolution matchup at Extreme Rules. We get interrupted by Ric Flair. Comes out and surprisingly endorses the Shield after, you would expect him after being a part of the Evolution of 2003-2004 era, but nope, comes out, turns his back on his old friends and says that the Shield is the representation of power and style of today's generation. We start the matchup. I have no actual notes of the match except that at some point where they're fighting outside in the ring, I could hear someone very audibly over the camera say, "Hey, back up, Old Spice." And I don't know who said it or who they said it to.
What?
But I cracked up. You can hear it. Someone on the camera says, "Hey, back up, Old Spice."
Old Spice.
It's like such a Guido thing to say. Like, "Hey, brown shirt over there. Why don't you move?"
You're going to start singing the Old Spice song now.
This match ends in a schmoz when, you know, tempers run high between all of them. They start attacking each other. Evolution getting the early advantage, beating down the Shield for what felt like a long time. I thought it was going to be another one of these patented Triple H 20-minute beatdowns that we've been seeing lately. But no, the Shield able to get the rally, take control, and end up finishing up this show standing tall on top of Evolution. Good for them. You know, I don't think Evolution should get all of the victories leading up into Extreme Rules. And as I've said before, I am stoked for this matchup. Tony, take over for me, though.
You know, this was a segment that I really wanted to see at the beginning of the show. And the more time that went on, the less I cared because they really didn't put any focus on it. I really am into the match. I really think it's going to be good. Actually, even and I'm anticipating that it might be one of the best matches of the entire year. But for the go-home show, this wasn't good enough. Maybe it's because they put a lot of focus on the Bray Wyatt thing tonight and had to keep doing the repeats of that, and they should have done something with the Shield ahead of time. Maybe it's just because I am getting a little bit tired of beatdowns. Maybe Ric Flair took a lot of the energy out for me. Flair doesn't do as much for me as he used to. When he comes out, it's not like, "Oh my God, Ric Flair's out there. Let me start doing the bow and all that other kind of stuff." It's Ric Flair. I kind of don't care. So,
is it just me or did he sound drunk?
I didn't pick up on that, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he always kind of sounds a little bit drunk. So he didn't say anything crazy. He didn't do anything crazy. It was weird that he came out and endorsed the Shield, but after he did that, they didn't make a big deal about it. Randy Orton just kind of looked at Triple H and went like, "The fuck?" And Triple H was just like, "Meh, all right." It wasn't a huge deal. It was like they sold it as if Todd Grisham told them what the fuck to do. But it just wasn't good enough. It's a shame, but I kind of started spacing out.
Standards over here wasn't good enough.
It wasn't good enough.
Ric Flair wasn't good enough.
Ric Flair is nowhere near as good of a legend as everybody says that he is, in my mind.
Oh, no. Oh, no. World's going to go aflame now. Miguel, did you like this? Miguel?
Wow, I really fucking hated it. He's speechless.
Apparently so. All right, well, Wago, what did you think about it?
Okay, as far as the Ric Flair bit goes, I think it cements that he's screwing over the Shield at Extreme Rules. And I'm pretty confident that the Shield is losing, especially considering they got the they came out looking the strongest at the end of tonight. As far as the match goes between Roman Reigns and Orton, I don't think those two guys have the best chemistry, or they wasn't going full out because it was a TV match. But my attitude to something like that is, if you're going to put them out there, you have them go all out to sell the match. So the beatdown with Evolution on the Shield was way too fucking long. And I thought it was going to be another one of those really boring, long beatdowns. And then the Shield came out of nowhere. I think it could have been cut short, and I'm sick of Raw overrunning as long as it does. 3 hours is enough, and then you add another fucking, what, 15, 20 minutes on? I want to pull my hair out.
15, 20 minutes plus a half hour pre-show, an hour post-show. And not to mention all the other wrestling shows you have throughout the week.
Yeah, it's way overkill. So I really wish they'd cut this short. I prefer if Raw ended 15 minutes earlier rather than go on 15 minutes longer. So, yeah, they're overdone, but it sells the Shield vs. Evolution match. And let's face it, the Extreme Rules pay-per-view or special event is the Shield vs. Evolution. There's nothing really else on that card that matters too much.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we got Miguel back. Miguel, what'd you think about our main event segment here tonight?
Okay, what did we talk about before this?
Oh, we're talking about the... what did we talk about before this?
Yeah, because I want to make sure... you'll have to excuse me, folks. I went to lie down because my back was hurting, and I guess I fell asleep, like dozed off a little bit. So I'm kind of in a shock right now. What were we talking about before this? So I don't want to make sure I
didn't. The Bad News Barrett.
Okay, and I think I mentioned
pretty
something.
Pretty sure we got your opinion on that.
Okay, good. I want to make sure I didn't accidentally fall asleep during this thing. It was the subtle sounds of Steven Wago that kind of lulled me to sleep. Sorry about that.
Oh, does that. Yeah, when you started talking about Roman Reigns, too, you know that could cradle anybody to sleep. But yeah, what did you think about our main event tonight, man? Ric Flair endorsing the Shield, Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton.
As far as the Ric Flair segment, it was nice to spice up this segment. Honestly, when I saw that we were just getting to our matchup and it was just turning 11, I was like, oh, this is going to be another mess of an ending where it's just a beatdown and a breakdown. And we've seen that happen so many times. I mean, when was the last time we had a WWE show end with a regular matchup?
I don't know.
Yeah, my point exactly. I mean, I knew that this was going to be a bit of a mess, or it's just going to be a lot of talking, so I wasn't looking forward to it. I was pleasantly surprised when Flair came out, although it really didn't amount to much. It was just him going, hey, the Shield's awesome. Bye. As far as the actual interplay between Orton and Roman Reigns, it proves that Roman Reigns is going to be a big star. I mean, it felt right having him in the ring with Orton. You know, the guy's going to go on to do much better things once the Shield ends. And it was basically just build up to the main event for the pay-per-view. And that's all really what it was.
Okay. All right, folks. Well, with that, I believe we are going to wrap up our conversation about tonight's events on Monday Night Raw. We're going to head into the last thing we like to do here. And that is a little thing we call the good, the bad, and the ugly. Creepa's on the radars in the chat room saying aces and eights. You just call the good, the bad, and the ugly music aces and eights music? Is that what you just compared that to? I hope not.
How dare you compare this to aces and eights?
Well, as this segment is called the good, the bad, and the ugly, that is what we recap from tonight's show. We pick what is the good, what was the worst, and what was the ugliest part of the show from tonight. So let's get that rolling with Mr. Juego. What was your good, bad, and ugly for tonight?
The good is Wade Barrett winning the tournament and just being Wade Barrett. He was really entertaining from the podium all the way into the ring. So Wade Barrett's definitely my good. As far as bad goes, I'm going to have to go with that beatdown from Evolution. I know it ended with the Shield coming out on top, but by the time it happened, I was already bored of the segment. As far as my ugly goes, Dylan.
All right, Miguel, you're good, bad, and ugly.
I would say good would probably be the Daniel Bryan Kane segment. I thought that really, like I said, aside from my nitpicking, really was put together really well. We got a somewhat decent matchup, actually, for Diva standards. And overall, it clicked for me, you know, aside from the you know, I think the Cena one comes close, but, you know, Cena beating Cena kind of just hurt it for me. Bad? Let me think. I don't know. Honestly, there was a lot of dead space during the whole night. I think that's what really made it difficult to watch, where you'd have one good segment and then you'd have just these long periods where nothing of interest really happened. And I'd probably say the ugly was me falling asleep during the main event.
Tony Mango, you're good, bad, and ugly.
Good, Bray Wyatt's promo and that whole segment. Fucking awesome. The bad, 3MB versus Los Matadores, except for, and I've got to throw one more pun out there. This one from Jerry Lawler. He said, is it true that Hornswoggle gets paid under the table?
Oh. Yeah, actually, both me and Jonna kind of giggled at that. So
yeah, that was the only saving grace of that part. Everything else was terrible. And the ugly, the Magneto outfit.
Aww. You don't like the Magneto cosplay?
No, that's not going to be featured on Fanboys Anonymous.
You think it's going to give like Jessica Nigri a run for her money?
I'm so making
maybe
that an
I would be okay with Jessica Nigri wearing that, but she'd have to cut some holes and stuff and figure that out.
All right, well, that brings it back to myself for my good, bad, and ugly. My good is going to be that opening segment. Holy cow, that was awesome. Definitely the best thing I think they've done with the Bray Wyatt character, which I always love the character moments for Bray Wyatt. I was, you know, a little tough on him for his matches at first, but even that, I think he's picked up the slack. Just an excellent example of what you could do with that character. Love how out there it was. I want to see more stuff like that. Maybe how The Undertaker had the druids, Bray Wyatt could have singing children. That could be his thing. My bad is going to be the news for anybody who thought Rob Van Dam was going to win the Intercontinental Title number one contender tournament. And my ugly is the fact that we're getting a WLC match. What the crap is that? All right. Well, with that, folks, that wraps up all the content we have. We have one last bit of business to do before we part from you this evening, and that is to let every single one of our hosts here take a few moments to let you know what's good in their world, what they're doing, and what they think you should check out besides what we're doing here every single Monday night. So let's take it around to everyone. Miguel, why don't you start us off?
Well, as you guys all know, I come from a far-off land, a land down under, as they say. And I forgot the rest of the lyrics to that song, so screw it. Retro on Limb. It's basically the channel that I represent. We have a bunch of shows coming up. We've got my show coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, the Untitled Movie Show. We're going to be dovetailing off of our horror episode that we did last week by doing a retrospective on the Scream series. So if you guys are a fan of that movie series, you could definitely check us out 8 o'clock tomorrow night on the Retro on Limb channel on blogtalkradio.com. Of course, check out all the other shows we've got on there, the Unradio show with Travis Goss. I Got Gameplay with Michael Burhan, Thursdays at 8, Saturdays at 8 for IGG. And I would like to announce for the first time, we now have a YouTube channel. So if you go on to YouTube and look up Retro on Limb, you'll see some of our episodes put up onto there. So if you have trouble with the Blog Talk Radio player, you can just keep an eye on the YouTube channel. You can subscribe to that, and our shows will be slowly but surely archived onto there as well. So we're growing little by little. So check us out. Check out. Keep your eyes on the Retro on Limb Network on blogtalkradio.com.
Yeah. Wago?
Right. So if you're a fan of the content we have on Mega Powers Radio, which is somewhere that actually gets hits, you can check out Addicted to Anime. Addicted to Anime is a monthly anime show where we talk stuff like Pokemon. We had a special based on that just yesterday, so you guys can go out and check that via the YouTube, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes. Also, check us out on Facebook.com/AddictedAnimeFans, AddictedAnimeFans.tumblr.com, and also check out UDMMA.com for all your MMA coverage. You can follow us on Facebook.com/UDMMA and Twitter.com/UDMMA.
UDMMA, Tony Mango.
I wish that I could sing mine, but I can't. SmarkOutMoment.com, YouTube.com/SmarkOutMoment, iTunes, Stitcher, that's where you're going to find Smack Talk and everything Smark Out Moment related. Bleacher Report is the other website that you'll find my wrestling opinions on. FanboysAnonymous.com has been mentioned a couple times. A Mango Tree, you can find through all those different ventures. And that's good enough for me.
All right. Well, folks, we hope you appreciated tonight's programming. If you did, please join us every single Monday night following the conclusion of Raw. We'll be here on Mega Powers Radio, www.megapowersradio.com, for the most interactive post-Raw experience out there. We always like to get all of your opinions on this show as well as ours. We have the chat room rolling as always. We got the phone lines. We got the Skype lines open every single week here on Mega Powers Radio. But if for any reason you cannot join us for the live experience, this show is archived in many places. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, and of course find us on SmarkOutMoment.com. Please support all the other excellent programming we got here on Mega Powers Radio. Lots of stuff popping every single night of the week. Specifically, like Wago said, we had our newest episode of Addicted to Anime about Pokemon. We got another episode of the Four Real Movie Club coming on. Sports Talk Weekly has just moved to Thursday nights, and a few other things cooking up in the oven. Please, if you're a Game of Thrones fan especially, check out the new podcast that I've just begun called the Sand and Snow Podcast, all about the weekly goings-ons in the world of Westeros and beyond. So if you like dragons and wolves and beheadings and boobies and floppy wiener, then go and check out that podcast, available on MegapowersRadio.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and other avenues coming soon as well. Folks, we hope you enjoyed this show tonight. For Stephen Wago, for Miguel Leon, and for Tony Mango, I'm Mike Payton. We'll see y'all next week here on MegapowersRadio.com.